luminaries, talking to the brightest minds in tech.
We have always believed that if we built the right technology, we could amplify and enhance and enable human progress. And when I look at what lies ahead, I realize that we've really just barely begun.
Your hosts are Mark Schaefer and Douglas Carr.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark Schaefer, and welcome to another episode of Luminaries, where we talk to the brightest minds in tech about IT and digital transformation, how it's affecting our businesses, our companies, and our lives. And I'm here today with my co-host, Doug Carr. How are you, Doug?
I am doing fantastic and so happy to be here.
Oh, this is an amazing opportunity because we're doing kind of a special live broadcast today. And we have this most amazing guest, Ray O'Farrell. And Ray, we got to spend a little bit of time with Ray a week or so ago. And let me tell you something, Ray is just one of the most inspiring, interesting, and kind men in technology you're going to find. Ray is the Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for VMware. Ray, so glad to have you with us today.
Very glad to be here.
I wanted to start off, because I'm the giddy geek in the room, my career spanned basically with VMware's. And so, first of all, just a pleasure to meet you in person. But back in the day, you know, VMware took over the desktop, and it really did magic. I don't think people even imagined the fact that they could run multiple operating systems and in virtualized environments on a desktop. And then with ESX, you know, taking that to the enterprise in 2001, I mean, you guys just lit up the industry. It literally transformed IT just with that one advancement in technology. And I wanted to ask you what it was like to be there on the dawn of virtualization.
Well, I joined VMware a little after the workstation product had really began to take off. Workstation is that original product which worked on the desktops. And it was really being used by customers who were focused on either development or testing. Actually, was a major thing they wanted as well. You want to build an application, you want to run it on, test it on different operating systems. How easier than to just fire up VMware and then fire up a bunch of different operating systems on your laptop or your desktop PC. This was not a server story at that time. And when I joined is when the company was really beginning to consider and open up this whole opportunity of how can we bring this technology into the enterprise. And broadly speaking, it was originally, the narrative was very much a consolidation play. It's sort of obvious. I have 10 servers running 10 applications, running 10 operating systems. With VMware, I can consolidate all this onto one server with obvious savings from a capital CapEx point of view. And that was the original narrative, and which really, you know, took off very quickly across the industry. Initially, people began to use this, as usual, tentatively trying out in some experimental workloads or safe workloads. Printer servers, file servers was the common first environment there. But then quickly began to use it in much more business-critical applications.
The thing that's amazing to me, Ray, is how quickly this took off and really how radical this idea was in its day. And I think there's some good lessons here around adoption, that technology, we can imagine, anything we can imagine, we can get technology to do. But in this world of transformation, sometimes getting people to do what we need them to do is the hard part. And yet, somehow, this took off like wildfire. So what are some of the lessons of adoption and the role of culture in your success?
So I think when I look back at the rapid takeoff of server virtualization, back then the product was called ESX. And I look at, you know, how quickly that began to be used across many, many different industries and across a wide variety of workloads in IT. I think there was really three things stand out in my mind. One of them is it had a very strong reputation for it just works. So people built trust in it very, very quickly. And that gave people the confidence to try it out. The second one was, in some ways, it's one of the most non-disruptive technologies, in that you were able to utilize this technology. technology, but you kept the same servers, you kept the same operating systems, you kept the same applications. And so you essentially poured this software onto your network, but most of the infrastructure, the most of your applications and the management of them was fundamentally unaffected. You didn't have to suddenly change how the company works. In fact, the rest of the company outside of IT didn't really know what was going on. Just suddenly IT seemed to be saving money. So that was one of the big strengths there. And I think the third one, which is more of a cultural thing, is because we had a number of people in most of our customers who quickly became enamored with this technology, and because, you know, our relationship with them and the fact it just works, they became very strong advocates for us within those organizations. So you had this situation where, you know, you'd go into customers and they're already with somebody using this technology who was as big an advocate within the organization as our salespeople or as our engineers would have been. So that was a powerful impact on that as well.
Wow, that's amazing. And just because, you know, it really was reliable and you kind of built on that culture of trust, didn't you?
Yeah, in many ways, if you think of, you know, VMware fairly proudly declares itself as an enterprise company, right? And what that really means is that you can trust your enterprise applications. You can trust your enterprise infrastructure on VMware. And we put a great deal of focus on that. You know, are we going to have bugs and problems like any other company, like any other software company? But we place a great deal of emphasis on trying to make sure that, one, those things do not occur, and if they do occur, to the greatest degree possible, we're all over it. And, in the early days, there was a lot of deep personal relationships built up with our customers. If they had a problem, we would have people on site. We would be there on the phone trying to work them through. And, that also helps to build that trust between the customer and a vendor like VMware. And that pays off if there's a problem later. They know you've come true before, they trust you'll come true again, and so you're able to get through some of those challenges along the way.
Well, you heard it here first. The chief technology officer is really the chief trust officer, isn't it?
It is. Trust is important.
When we spoke to analysts about IT transformation, I think one of the key takeaways that we got was, and it was actually surprising, was that people that rapidly adopted new technology could actually save so much money. I think it was upwards of 24%. That could fund the innovation to transform their IT. And it seems that VMware is, that's the living statement of what right. VMware did, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at virtualization, and I don't mean in just the sense of VMware for compute, but this modeling of everything from a software point of view, that inherently gives a lot of flexibility and a lot of ability to build new features and new things on top of that. Now, how does an organization fund that? If they can see the initial savings based on something like virtualization or leveraging a better management subsystem, one, they've now got a little more budget to play with. But second of all, they have demonstrated the ability to leverage this new technology to do something new and innovative. And so what I find is almost like a building on itself here. Once you virtualize something, it opens up new possibilities. Once you convert it to software, it opens up a whole new set of possibilities in terms of management and functionality, which you could not have done in the physical environment itself. So, virtualization, yeah, it allows me to consolidate onto one server. But as a side effect of that, I begin to represent the virtual machines as software. As a side effect of that, I get to build highly flexible clouds. So you begin to see all these things building upon each other.
Ray, I'm going to take us a little bit of a different direction now, because one of the things I've been so excited to talk to you about is this idea of the innovation process. And I know this is something you're really passionate about. To compete today, to win, it's all about speed and really finding ways to disrupt yourself. As a CTO, how do you encourage that in your company? How do you enable a culture of change, innovation, and really disruption?
Right. So one of the one of the things when people ask me that question. So VMware is proud of its innovation, and we actually put a lot of effort into making sure that we continue to innovate, and that in some ways, there is almost every problem that we see tends to have a technology answer. At least that's the first view of it, right? And so we begin to jump on these things. However, you cannot stand up at 8 a.m. in the morning and say, let's innovate between noon and 2 today. It just doesn't work like that. So it's around creating a culture that allows that innovation to succeed, and a culture that, and I use the word allow, because what you're actually doing is you're telling the engineering organization or the sales organization or whatever the organization who's interfacing with a customer or leveraging a piece of technology that says you don't necessarily need to stick to the way we always did it. If there's a better way, let's get it on the surface and figure out what we can do with that. Or if we've got a product that's not working out quite right, let's not continue to, you know, do whatever we were doing before, because we're going to get the same result. Do we need to partner with somebody? Do we need to embrace the technology in a different way? And to create a culture where those questions continuously can be asked and keep, you know, new projects are popping up or new ideas are popping up. That's how, you know, we focus on the creation of an innovation engine. It's not that you necessarily plan for innovation, you plan for a culture which then generates that innovation. And, you know, we've many programs across the company to try and make that happen. Simple things like, you know, we organize hackathons across the company, but we make sure that those hackathons leverage people from the sales organization, sales engineers, with development engineers, with support engineers. We try and blend these things together because you don't know where the best idea is going to come from. Also, you know, if you're an engineer focused on a particular technology problem, you need to be open to understanding what is a customer feeling, what is a customer experiencing, and it might not be about that technology. In fact, one of the things as engineers we often tend to focus on is how do I solve a problem? Sometimes you might be looking at not how to solve a problem, but how do I create a whole new opportunity? And that's what you get by listening to a wider range array of people coming in from our field CTOs or our sales engineers and making sure there's forums to make all of that happen.
And what are the implications for you as a leader to enable this change? Because people tend to want to keep things the same. They want to be safe. They want stability. And you are trying to make people feel safe for disruption. So what are some of the behaviors you need to model? What are some of the implications for leadership for a self-disrupting organization?
I think one of the strongest things is this sense of safety. That sounds a little bit kind of boring, whatever it is. But what that really means is that the risk of taking a risk is lower than the risk of not taking the risk, right?
Wow, it's
meaning
powerful.
You need to look at what is exactly, if you stay doing exactly the same thing over and over again, when the rest of the world changes around you, over time, you're just going to be doomed, right? Because, you know, new technologies, new competitors, new approaches, they're going to beat you out. So instead, what you need to do is be able to keep pushing the envelopes and discovering what you can do to advance, what you can do to be more competitive. And all of those have a little bit of risk associated with them. A whole bunch of them will fail, right? And so what you need to do as a leader is make sure that the organization knows it's okay to fail. Now, that doesn't mean you can, you know, destroy the company or upset a whole bunch of customers. But what you need to be able to do is manage that very, very carefully. Introduce a new technology, see if it works. If it doesn't work, maybe not the end of the world, but some of them will work. And then your ability to be able to jump on those is very, very powerful. And by the way, it's not even about technology. Sometimes it's about how you support customers, how you sell, how you, you know, communicate with customers, what best practices are. It's not always the same way, which is just technology. It's around a much broader sense of what that innovation should be.
Now, obviously, you can't get into any intellectual property with this, but I am curious, as we look to, when we look to the future of virtualization, what excites you? What is around the corner?
Right. So I think quite often when we use the word virtualization, very quickly go to the virtualization of the x86 processor and virtual machines, right? But broadly speaking, when we speak of virtualization or abstraction, we use the word software-defined. So I think what we are seeing is, you know, we use phrases like the software-defined data center, software-defined storage, software-defined networking. So rather than speaking of that as virtualization, it is the representation of this physical infrastructure in a new way in software. And I think that is going to continue. So, you know, we've introduced storage virtualization. We're working with network virtualization right now. What we saw when we first virtualized compute was simply because you virtualized, you got this explosion of new capabilities. Because in the end, it's all software, which is fast moving. You can experiment, you can try things out very easily. So really, we're going to see the same in networking and storage as well. So definitely, that's one area I will see just more and more of this focus on software-defined everything. And even the software-defined or the software representation of the infrastructure. You hear people sometimes use the phrase software-defined infrastructure. Well, that essentially means I am representing this infrastructure by a piece of software or by a description. And now that means that the execution or implementation of the infrastructure is the execution of a program. So you can instantiate infrastructure in ways that were never realized before. Now, don't take that too far. Underneath, there's real hardware, right? But you're abstracting and making all of this very, very flexible. So I think you're going to see more and more of that. I think some of the other new areas, when we speak of companies being digitally transformed, what I've noticed is that means that the IT organization suddenly shifts into this different role. It is a role by where it is now front and center in terms of customer acquisition and interface to the customer. That's going to continue, but now in a world of IoT, it's suddenly the IT organization is not just focused on how do I run the website that interfaces to the customer, or how do I build the mobile app which interfaces to the customer. It's how do I abstract real-world information and make real-world, often near real-time decisions around that to offer customers or a factory or a process, just to become more efficient and better in some way. And I think that's a big change for the IT organization, because now the company is becoming IT, as it were. And I think that's one of the biggest changes I think we're going to see over the next few years.
It almost sounds like the CIO role is becoming similar to the CEO role, as the strategy becomes the software. The software used to enable the business, and now in many ways the software is the business. Some of the things that we've heard about companies that are in the food business or in the medical business, they're really technology companies that sell food, or technology companies that dispense healthcare,
yep,
for example.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. The CIO and the VPs of infrastructure are no longer about focusing on some, you know, back office activity around keeping the company running in the background. Instead, they now are front and center. And being front and center, they're responsible for the competitive edge that the customer that the company has. And yeah, that makes them begin to have to think like a CEO. How do I make my investments to gain a little bit more of that edge? And by the way, that equally might mean that some of the things they used to do, how do I try and save a little bit of money on, you know, making networking somewhat different and so on, that is now a lower priority than the flexibility and the agility that something like a software-defined networking or something like a software approach brings up. So agility, speed, competitiveness rises to the top of the surface as far as the CIO is concerned.
Yeah, and speaking of agility and speed, another thing I saw that you said in an interview that was kind of provocative, that a company integrating with a public cloud is the fastest way to market. It's a source of radical speed. Tell us a little bit more about that comment.
So if you look at some of the small, if you look at particularly the SaaS companies out there, and you meet, you know, you talk to their VPs of infrastructure and engineers, when you say, what is most important to you? Over and over again, the agility and speed, they're the words that appear. And because of that, and the reason why that's important to them is because they're constantly in a competitive battle all the time. And in this new world where, you know, cloud, private, public, when clouds are readily available, the building of an infrastructure now is secondary to how a competitor can suddenly pop up. They can get near free or near limitless access to data center infrastructure by leveraging cloud assets. And so because of that, it allows them to move very, very fast, because the whole world has now become digitized, that speed directly relates to how they relate to their customers. So competitors can pop up very, very fast. I think that's why it is so important in the mix. I think that you know, where companies hit some challenges in that is, one, if you forget that emphasis on agility and speed and how important that is, and you begin, you know, focusing on not disrupting yourself, yeah, then you could have some challenges really quickly. But focusing on that is very, focusing on speed, agility, leveraging cloud, leveraging new technology to do that is very important.
Ray, one of the fascinating things to me is when you look across Dell Technologies and each of the companies is that, you know, you have someone out there that's selling storage and selling hardware, and you have VMware, which is almost the opposite, that they're selling solutions that minimize the necessity for that hardware and software, or that hardware and storage. And I think it's fascinating that across a company, you have maybe these two competing levels. And of course, it goes to security, it goes to everything within Dell. Can you speak a little bit to, you know, VMware and how you work together and autonomously within the organization?
Yeah. First of all, it's not always clear that you're in this either-or situation. If you recall earlier, we spoke of what you're selling is trust to some degree, right? And you know, a VMware and Dell EMC group of companies can sell a lot of trust. You know, EMC is obviously the trusted storage. Dell has been the trusted compute for years. Yep. VMware trusted virtualization. And so because of that, we have many, many opportunities to work really well together. And we take advantage of them as much as we can. So on the one hand, on the one side of it, there's this great opportunity to take advantage of the, you know, the sheer strength and heft of a company the size of Dell Technologies to be able to deliver solutions that, you know, many other companies cannot do. They don't have the breadth, they don't have the scale, they don't have the strength that is there. So we take advantage of that. What you're also noting, though, is that VMware is a separate, independent company. And it is a company for many years who has built a software platform. And by definition, a platform needs to be, you know, encompassing and broad. And so, yeah, we do work across a lot of storage, storage other than EMC. We work with a lot of compute other than Dell. We work with lots of partnerships and vendors across different clouds and security. And you know, in some ways, yeah, occasionally that will cause a problem in some situation where there's a competitive situation between one part of Dell and maybe a partner with VMware. But it is vitally important for us to maintain that platform story. And frankly, Dell Technologies and EMC beforehand has been very supportive in allowing us to do that, in saying they recognize the fact that VMware will be there sometimes, you know, competing with a partner. But as long as that, broadly speaking, we're trying to solve a problem for a customer, and as long as that, broadly speaking, where we can, we are always working and doing the best together, that works out. You got to balance the two different things. The strength of a platform means you got to get into some of these co-opetition type of situations, and that's, you know, it's just something to be managed. And you know, Dell Technologies, VMware has been pretty good at trying to find that balance, basically, you know, week after week, day after day.
Ray, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your insights with us today. We've been speaking with Ray O'Farrell, Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer, perhaps Chief Trust Officer of VMware. This is Mark Schaefer and Doug Carr for Luminaries. Thank you so much for listening. We never take you for granted. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Luminaries, talking to the brightest minds in tech, a podcast series from Dell Technologies.